This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
After 3 years of political instability, around 900,000 voters are expected to head to the polls with some hope of finding a better path forward for the country.
That was Alvaro Andrade, managing editor of VOA's Portuguese to Africa service on Guinea-Bissau's residents going to the polls Sunday to choose representatives of the National People's Assembly. Details coming up. Also, a traditional leader in Cameroon is free after 18 months in captivity. And more protests are seen in Senegal today after opposition leader Ousmane Sonko was sentenced to 2 years in prison. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. A prominent traditional leader in Cameroon's troubled northwest region has been freed after 18 months of being held captive by separatists. Government officials say Cameroon's military rescued Fon Kevin Shumitang in battles with separatist fighters, but the fighters insist that they set the traditional ruler free. Moke Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Cameroon government officials say the Central African States military freed Fon Kevin Shumitang from a separatist camp in Bui in the northwest region on Thursday morning. Government officials say several fighters were killed in the encounter but gave no further details. Deben Chofo, the governor of the region, says the traditional leader's release shows authorities are gradually restoring order after years of separatist unrest.
I would like to congratulate military men that carried out the operation. They have been able to take back the Fon of Bambara. Indeed, it is coming to confirm that things are coming back bit by bit normally in almost the major part of the northwest region.
Chofo says Shumitang will be presented to civilians at his palace after undergoing a medical examination. Images shared on social media and broadcast over local TV stations showed Shumitang unkempt but not looking thin or unhealthy. Shumitang was kidnapped from his palace in the town of Bambalang by separatist fighters led by self-proclaimed General No Pity on December 7, 2021, according to the military. The military says it took a long time to free Shumitang because the government wanted him alive. Capo Daniel is leader of the Ambazonia People's Rights Advocacy Platform, one of Cameroon's separatist groups. He says the separatists released Shumitang after 5 months of negotiations.
The Cameroon government arrested 15 family members of No Pity and transferred to Yaoundé. Both of them were used to pressurize No Pity to come to a compromise to release the Fon of Bambalang. That is exactly what happened. There was no military operation. The Fon was released and then handed over to the Cameroon authorities.
Daniel says the separatists expect officials to release No Pity's family members in the days ahead, as agreed during negotiations. Cameroon's military says the allegation that Shumitang's release was negotiated is unfounded. The government has not said whether No Pity's relatives were arrested to force the self-proclaimed general to release Shumitang. Shumitang is the president of the Northwest Region's House of Chiefs and vice president of the Northwest Regional Assembly. Both structures are elected organs that discuss community development. Shumitang was elected during Cameroon's first ever regional elections in 2020. Separatists say he was abducted for participating in the House of Chiefs, a structure they say does not represent the aspirations of English speakers. Cameroon's English-speaking separatists launched their rebellion in 2017 after what they say was years of discrimination by the country's French-speaking majority. The conflict has killed more than 6,000 people and displaced more than 760,000 others, according to the International Crisis Group. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Guinea-Bissau residents go to the polls Sunday to choose 102 representatives of the National People's Assembly. To brief us more on the legislative elections, I talked with Alvaro Andrade, managing editor of VOA's Portuguese to Africa service.
After 3 years of political instability, around 900,000 voters are expected to head to the polls with some hope of finding a better path forward for the country. But I have been talking with a lot of people in Bissau. Voters voiced high hopes as well as anxiety due to the post-election violence in years past. On the fields, there are 20 parties and two coalitions. They will choose one or two deputies, and the party or coalition with the highest number of deputies or votes elected will lead the government in the next 5 years. There is a lot of expectation, yes, but political observers say that the instability could continue because if the coalition Pai Terra Ranca, who won the election in 2019, wins again, the president Umaro Sissoko Embalo could create the same situation of 2022. The president has already this week or last week that he will not accept the name of the leader of that coalition if he wins election for the position of prime minister to lead the next government. So there is a scenario of repetition of the crisis. Yesterday, the head of the African Union Observer Mission, the former Mozambican president, Joaquim Chissano, asked politicians to respect the constitution because the country needs to move forward.
Alvaro, you brought up a very good point. President Umaro Embalo, 2022, dissolved the assembly and then accusing deputies of corruption and poor parliamentary governance, as well as unsolvable differences between the government and the assembly. So are you saying there could be a repeat of that if the president does not like what he's seeing?
Yes, the question is the PAIGC, the party of the independence, won the election in 2019. And the president of the parliament was from PAIGC. And PAIGC was the majority group on the parliament. But the president chose other party to lead the government. No dialogue in the parliament. Half with the president, half with the opposition. And then everything was stuck during more than 1 year. And then the president decided to dissolve the parliament. This is a scenario could repeat if it's good to remember, if the party who supported the president win the election, okay, it's going to be okay. If this party got the majority, is not, we're going to have same problem in the parliament.
And you have followed the politics of Guinea-Bissau very closely, Alvaro, and the country has struggled with government stability, facing multiple attempted coups since gaining independence from Portugal in 1974. Overall, how is the stability of the country as you see it?
In the street, everything is okay. In the street, there is no problem. The problem is between the politics. It's the same group of politics in the last 15 years. It's the same politics in different parties or the same parties. The problem is between the leaders, not on the street, not between the people. The institution works is if they normally on the street, but each 3 years, each 4 years, you have a new government. It couldn't finish the mandate or the term. Is very difficult for a country. Even the president, former president of Mozambique, said yesterday the country needs to move forward.
Speaking with me, that was Alvaro Andrade, managing editor of VOA's Portuguese to Africa service. Cholera has surged recently in several African countries. The World Health Organization says 28 million people suffer from it in East and Southern Africa and is calling for $171 million to help contain its spread. Almost 24 people have died from cholera just outside South Africa's capital, Pretoria, over the past 2 weeks, and hundreds have been hospitalized. VOA spoke to residents who have been affected and officials who are still searching for the source. Kate Bartlett reports from Hammanskraal, South Africa.
While cholera, a waterborne disease, might be common in other parts of Africa, it's unusual in South Africa, the most industrialized country on the continent. But almost 24 people have died in recent days, and in this impoverished area just outside the capital Pretoria, residents like Lerato Marota place the blame squarely on the government.
People are dying about cholera, so we are scaring now because of our water is very dirty.
She says her husband became sick from the water, but luckily recovered after going to the hospital. However, she says while this outbreak is new, the water has been dirty for years.
We blame the government because we can't blame anyone because the government, I mean, it's been a long time we were fighting to get the clean water, but they didn't say anything about it. I think it's corruption because they don't clean the water.
South African NGO, Gift of the Givers, is trying to stop the spread of the disease, distributing thousands of bottles of clean water and other aid to the community and to schools like this one. The NGO's Clifford Mabe says people are anxious.
There was an outbreak in Hammarskraal, so the people of Hammarskraal, they are panicking to drink the tap water.
The government has also set up this field hospital to take pressure off the main hospital in town, says Zina Bam from the Department of Health.
We promote people with any gastrointestinal symptoms or signs or problems that they come here, and then we do a triage out of them and then we give them treatment. So the treatment that we're doing on site is oral rehydration station, and then we put up intravenous therapy.
She said the government was still conducting tests to determine the source of the outbreak. Opposition parties have blamed government mismanagement for causing the crisis in the first place and say it's all part of South Africa's crumbling infrastructure. The worst electricity crisis in years has also been causing daily blackouts that are hitting the economy hard. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Hammanskraal, South Africa.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. With the latest ceasefire just a memory, residents of Sudan's capital took shelter as fighting ramped up today, with the two combatant forces seeking an advantage before returning to the bargaining table. The army says it has brought reinforcements to the capital to participate in operations in the Khartoum area to weaken its former paramilitary ally, the Rapid Support Forces. Neither side has managed to gain a decisive advantage since the fighting began 7 weeks ago. The leaders of the rival forces seem to be undaunted by sanctions the United States announced yesterday, and along with threats of more if the fighting continues. The United Nations Security Council was set to review its mission in Sudan, whose mandate expires tomorrow. Aid agencies worry about the conflict dragging on and destabilizing Sudan's neighbors with floods of refugees. The UN says 1.2 million people have been displaced within Sudan, and more than 425,000 have fled abroad, while some 25 million people, more than half the population, needing aid and protection. Some protests were seen in Dakar, Senegal, a day after a court convicted opposition leader Ousmane Sonko of corrupting youth, a lesser offense than the rape charges he faced. A Senegalese official said 9 people were killed in clashes yesterday. Reporter Alpha Jallo in Dakar tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that Sonko's young supporters are angry because the conviction could prevent him from running for president next year.
Early in the morning, I mean, the Minister of Interior was quoted as saying that 9 people lost their lives, 3 from the regional capital, Sikansor, where Mr. Sonko is the mayor, and 6 other people in Dakar, in various regions in Dakar. But the worst incidents happened at the University of Chef Antijob, especially the School of Journalism has been completely destroyed. Classes have been set in fire, restaurants, vehicles and everything, so the damage is quite massive.
I saw a picture of it. In the picture, I see smoke from tear gas during the clashes with the police on that street. And is it called Cheikh Anta Diop University?
Yes, that's the Cheikh Anta Diop University. And in fact, one police officer was even among those who were killed. He was pelted with stone by angry rioters, and he lost his life. So I mean, until this morning, there was some demonstration, but as people were preparing to go to the mosque, everything returned to, calm. But just a few minutes ago, not far away from where I live, I just got, reports that there are people, some youths, angry youths, in groups have started, burning tires in the Kermasar in the outskirts of Dakar.
I take it that the worst of the protests are happening at places like the university, and the youths are upset because Mr. Sanko's followers, were they mostly young people?
Exactly. And he got a large, followers from the young people. And most of majority of them are at the university. And elsewhere in Sikansor also, they have, vandalized so many government buildings. They have, destroyed so many government vehicles. And a lot of damage was caused yesterday in Sikansor, also in St. Louis, and also in Cairns. So it was quite spontaneous that it was everywhere. But then this morning, the minister said that it was not only, the popularity of Sonko that was, he said that, these are group of, organized crime bandits, because among those arrested, he said that people were arrested with automatic rifles, to see very dangerous weapons, and most of them were in wheels. They never wanted their faces to be identified. But so far, according to the report, the police have arrested so many people within Dakar and in Casamance as well.
As you know, the court sentenced Sonko to 2 years in prison. He didn't attend the trial. His lawyer has said that the warrant had not been issued for his arrest. And he also said that with this verdict, the authorities want to prevent him from standing in the next presidential election. So is that what people are upset about?
Yes, I interviewed some people. They said that, this trial is all a kind of joke, because for 2 years, so many people, have been waiting. And then Mr. Sonko was, the allegations were that Mr. Sonko was alleged of rape and death threats. But at the final end, they don't know even what they have, brought, the charges they brought, corrupting young people, which is not many. So many Senegalese even cannot understand that. Even there are so many, Senegalese journalists, even they have problem of even trying to explain what the charges against Mr. Sonko, the new charges against Mr. Sonko, in which he is condemned to 2 years imprisonment.
That's reporter Alpha Jallo in Dakar, Senegal. He was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Damme. Senegal's interior ministry appealed for calm and said the government would take all measures to protect the safety of people and property. In addition, the French news agency AFP reports that the justice minister said Sonko could be arrested at any time. Sonko, the head of the Pastif Patriots Party, is particularly popular among young people. Critics see Sonko as a rabble-rouser who has sown instability. Alpha spoke with some people in Dakar about the protests and the verdict in the trial of Senegalese opposition leader Ousmane Sonko. Moussa Diallo is a student in Kermasar in the outskirts of Dakar. He thinks the case ended properly.
À cause de cette situation qu'on est actuellement, comme entre Sonko et Adjissa,
Diallo says finally the prosecutor has decided to give judgment on this case. He thinks the judgment is authentic and he really appreciates the ruling which sentences Sonko to 2 years in prison. He goes on to say the verdict is correct and people should accept it. Saifuti Falls is a civil servant who is critical of how the court proceedings played out.
Je dirais que j'ai juste un sentiment de profonde déception et d'une grande désolation.
She says she has a feeling of deception and disillusion because, in her opinion, they took hostage the whole country for 2 years on allegations of rape and death threats, only to end up saying something like youth corruption. She goes on to say they have plunged the country into total chaos, which could have been avoided. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres today condemned the violence in Senegal and urged restraint. UN Deputy Spokesperson Farhan Haq told reporters that Guterres offered condolences to those who loved ones who have been killed in the clashes. Also, West Africa's main regional bloc, ECOWAS, today condemned the violence and said it was following the situation there with concern. Namibia's president recently signed a projected $10 billion deal that calls for Namibia and the German company Hyphen Energy to produce green hydrogen, a clean energy source that advocates sea as the fuel of the future. Skeptics wonder if Namibia can be competitive in the market for this energy. Michael Brown narrates this report from Vittorio Angula in Windhoek, Namibia.
Hyphen Energy last Friday concluded a multi-billion dollar agreement with the Namibian government to construct the project in the Tau Kyb National Park. If a study finds the project to be feasible, Hyphen will build factories, pipelines, and ports with the goal of producing 2 million tons of ammonia by 2030. The ammonia, which could be used as fuel, would be produced using renewable energy sources like solar and wind power, both of which Namibia has in abundance. The project would also produce oxygen and electricity for local consumption. Speaking to the Voice of America, Namibia's Green Hydrogen Commissioner and Economic Advisor to the President, James Manupe, said Hyphen Energy has made agreements with companies from Germany, England, South Korea, and Japan that will ensure buyers for the company's main products. The green hydrogen project, he says, will be vertically integrated.
And in other parts of the world, you might get one player developing the port, another player developing the pipelines, another player developing the renewable energy, and so on and so forth. Whereas this project is envisioning to do all of that under one umbrella. And so that is what a vertically integrated project looks like.
Hyphen's chief executive officer, Marco Raffinetti, said securing funding for green hydrogen projects is a massive undertaking, but the investments are necessary if the world is to reduce the carbon output from fossil fuels, which drive climate change.
Projects of this nature, because this is a new industry, they do require some form of support, particularly when you're trying to mobilize currency inflows into a country on the scale that we are considering doing for the project. And that credit enhancement will really help to accelerate green hydrogen adoption.
Raffinetti says alternative sources of power, such as solar energy, were very expensive 20 years ago, but have gradually become cheaper. He says green hydrogen might follow the same trajectory. Namibian political commentators have raised red flags, however, regarding the speedy adoption of the project that is being spearheaded by the presidency. They question whether the project actually has national buy-in. Speaking to VOA political analyst Pindapala Hengala, expressed some reservations about the project.
This is a 45-year project, and a 40-year project. And for us, I think, I believe it didn't really fall right. It was like, in my opinion, I don't think it went through the right due process. And it's not really clear what exactly is going on, because we're also looking at critical raw materials. It's a comprehensive project which has been fast-tracked, you know? And so that's my concern.
This green hydrogen project is touted as the largest of its kind in sub-Saharan Africa. Other countries such as Morocco are also embarking on green hydrogen projects. And Namibian commentators question what competitive advantage Namibia would have with exports over countries in closer proximity to Europe, which is viewed as the main buyer. For Vitalio, Angola, and Windhoek, Namibia, Michael Brown, VOA News.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.